Managed futures, as an absolute return strategy and as a return-enhancing diversifier, are often one of the most misunderstood investment solutions that, by the way, institutions have successfully been using for decades as an uncorrelated source of excess returns. That's what we're going to talk about this episode, and joining me to do that is Rodrigo Gordillo, president at Resolve Asset Management Global, co-founders, along with Newfound Research, of the Return Stacked ETF suite of return stacking solutions, which aim to solve the toughest of all traditional diversification and behavioral dilemmas. Rod, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me again, Pierre. Always a pleasure.
Rod, first of all, what are managed futures trend following strategies?
It's a strategy as old as modern finance. If you think about the original turtle traders and the market wizards, I'm sure a lot of people in your audience have heard of those kind of individuals that were legends in the trading world. They were the original trend following managed futures guys, right? They were looking at charts, seeing if they were going up, and they were trading equities, they were trading global bonds, commodities, currencies, and identifying upward trends and buying them, and then looking at the charts and, you know, manually clicking those orders. When they go and start losing money, they'd start shorting them. And that's how trend following began from a fundamental perspective. And then over the years, and that's back in the 80s, right? But over the years, it evolved into more systematic approaches where you're, you know, very, very disciplined about how you are executing those trades, no longer gut-based, but more systematically based, repetitive, and consistent. So that is what trend following is if something that has recently gone up and is likely to continue to go up for a period, and something that has recently gone down is likely to continue to go down for a period. And we see this play out in stocks, in individual stocks even, in asset classes, in all these asset classes that I just walked you through. It tends to play out over time. And so why is it that this phenomenon works? Why has it been our bout? And I think the answer to that has been answered by Amos Tversky and Danny Kahneman. Sadly, Kahneman recently passed away, but he was at the forefront of this with behavioral finance, talking about concepts like anchoring and adjusting, where information comes out and people anchor to the information, but not fully adjust to the new information, just a little bit. So there's time for us to identify that people are anchoring upward. You can place your bets in, and then you can benefit from the adjustment that inevitably goes down, or cascade effects, which is the same idea of like cascading information taking a while to dissipate. So those are the behavior angles. There's also some risk reasons why it continues to work. But broadly speaking, I think that if you're going to see the reason you see this working is because human beings are continue to be human beings, and we tend to have herding behavior, and it's never really gone away.
It strikes me as a very unique and useful strategy, the kind many folks would have traditionally thought or dreamt of owning, but simply didn't understand that it existed, quote unquote, as managed futures. So why would investors want to stack them in a portfolio as an allocation?
Well, the first thing is, if you ever do invest in managed futures, you will and allocate to them, you'll likely have that position or that fund or ETF be the most diversified thing you have in your portfolio, right? Like most 60-40 portfolios are exactly that. 60%, bunch of equities, mostly domestic, because we have domestic home country bias, some international, and the bonds are generally very domestic. So it's very, very domestically driven, two asset classes, and not much more than that. When you look and you x-ray into the options for managed futures trend followers to select asset classes, we're looking at dozens and dozens of markets across those major categories, right? Equities, bonds, commodities, and currencies. So first and foremost, diversification. Secondly, you know, the golden rule behind asset allocation and portfolio construction is you want to find as many things that have an upward sloping equity line so that you expect to make positive returns over time, but move differently from each other. Right, we've seen that firsthand between bonds and equities from 1982 all the way to 2020. Some of those correlations have broken down, and we've always known that they would when there was an inflationary regime. But we see the value of that diversification. The question is, you know, where else can we find true non-correlation? And when you look at the hedge fund space, when you look at all the categories from long short equity to market neutral to merger arbitrage to, you know, the private credit, private equity, the two categories that stand out as being legitimately, consistently zero correlation over a prolonged period of time and the ability to have really strong negative correlations at the right time happens to be managed futures trend and systematic macro. And the reason for that is because they're not market neutral. They are directional. If the trends are up and we're in a big equity bull market, then there's going to be more returns coming from the equities that we are long in that trend following strategy. But if, God forbid, there were to be a bear market, guess what? The benefit of being able to short equities, short commodities, go long treasuries in 08 was where all the magic happened, right? It just happens to be a unique asset class that has historically provided double-digit returns when you need them the most. And then when it's the other interesting thing about trend following is that it doesn't try to predict the future. It's a reactive function. Something's happening. We are going to iterate based on what's happening today. And so it didn't need to predict that in an inflationary regime like 2022, that commodities would be the best game in town and that you wanted to short both equities and bonds. It wasn't looking back at 08 and saying, hey, bonds were good, commodities and equities were bad. We should do that now. It just reacted. And that's another great year for just a broad indices of managed futures up double digits, mainly from commodities and then shorting bonds, right? So it's just, it's got this great character of crisis alpha and non-correlation equities and bonds, which is great, obviously, during bear markets and inflationary regimes. Now we can talk about when it's not so great, but yeah, broadly speaking, that's why people should want them.
Institutional investors have been using these strategies for decades as allocations. What has been the problem? I mean, I know there's some obvious technology barriers to entry or accessibility problems and also red tape in the past, but for as long as they've been available, and they have been, mostly to the most well-heeled investors, why haven't they been more popular with investors in general?
Well, look, when you talk to the average investor or advisor, and you talk about the broad idea of diversification, widely speaking, people believe that diversification is a good thing, right? That's generally not questioned. But the reality is that the lived experience of those that decided to diversify, and even if like we're talking about global equity investing, right? Those that are being thoughtful and using their fiduciary responsibility correctly have been burnt. It's been a bear market in diversification, as Meb Faber puts it, right? And so reality is over the last decade, when you could have just invested in a very cheap, simple index like the S&P 500, you would have been better off. And diversification to that decade of investors felt, you know, I think they're synonymous with words like sacrifice or compromise, right? A trade-off between risk management and the return potential, right? We just don't think that that's going to be the case in the future. And I think they were correct, right? If you are adding a 10-20% allocation to managed futures in the last decade, you had two things that needed to go right. Number one, you need to deliver diversification. And number two, you needed to beat the S&P 500, right? That's a really tough thing. It's a tall, tall order, right? And so the last decade has been just had a chilling effect to anything that wasn't the Mag 7, really. Let's be honest, if we get down to the nitty gritty of it. And so they just got out of favor until 2022, when we saw the value of it again, right? That's one thing. The other thing is that it made positive returns during that decade. They were just low single digits in contrast to 16% annualized during, you know, right before the crash. So that's just really hard to do, right? And you mentioned institutions were fine because they don't necessarily use managed futures to, like, they don't sell their equities and bonds to buy these diversifiers. I mean, at least the more sophisticated ones, right? They use this concept of portable alpha or return stacking to stack these diversifiers on top. And that's really the big shift in the last couple of years in retail that allows people to say, okay, you know, maybe it isn't, diversification isn't a necessary evil anymore. Maybe it's accretive. Maybe it's, now we have a way to say yes and, right? Yes to my equities and some diversification. Whereas in the past, I think it was just too risky to have a prolonged period where you would underperform equities.
That's the classical diversification dilemma, right? The dilemma is that in order to have invested in something like managed futures, trend following, or merger arbitrage, or carry, or any of those absolute return strategies, you had to give up some of your equities and or some of your bonds, or both. In hindsight, you had to sacrifice.
Correct. And it, you know, it's, you have a decade like the last decade where, you know, you're waiting for the other shoe to drop, and it never drops, and it never drops, right? And you have these, let's say, managed futures. There was a period there where it was annualizing at 2-3%. Now you have, let's say you have 100% equity portfolio, and in 2012, you sell 10% of your equities to buy 10% of managed futures. Fast forward a decade, the 90% did 16%, the 10% that you allocated to only annualized at 2%, that's really tough, right? But the way that return stacking works, so the ETFs that we run are RSST, return stacked US stocks in trend, managed futures trend, and return stacked bonds in managed futures trend. For every dollar that you give these ETFs, you're going to get a dollar of the S&P and a dollar of managed futures. So instead of having to make room in the portfolio back in, let's say, 2012, you would have sold 10% to buy something like RSST. And that gives you, you sold 10% of your stocks, and then you bought it right back with this 1+1 fund. You get, so you're back at 100% equity, and then you have the returns of a managed futures strategy stacked on top. Now go through that period where managed futures only did 2%. Well, it's whatever, that's because we're stacking it. If the S&P did 16% annualized, this return stacked idea would have done 16% annualized plus an extra 2. It's actually 2% is a lot of money. And then if you fast forward to 2022, when the S&P is down 30-35%, and managed futures are up double digits, offsetting most of the losses, if not more, then all of a sudden you're like, okay, that's an easy way for me to bide my time to allow diversification to work, right? And of course, in between that decade, there was 1 or 2 years where managed futures was negative. But again, from a behavioral perspective, if you hold that 1+1 prepackaged solution, S&P's up 20, managed futures is down 4, that prepackaged solution is up 16. A few people will complain about that, right? It becomes a much easier line item to hold. And I think, you know, diversification is always better when mixed in with other things that zig when they zag behaviorally, right? Much like how private equities become really easy to hold because they smooth out returns over 18 months. It's still equities, but they just, the packaging is easier to hold. And I think return stacked solutions is also easier to hold and will be a bit of a revolution going forward.
So now we've got the return of the portable alpha concept, which you have and are credited for rebranding as return stacking. Talk about how investors can now allocate to these strategies using the return stacked ETF suite without having to give up any of their traditional exposure to stocks and bonds.
Yeah, so let me walk you through the simple mechanics. Let's start with RSST. When you x-ray the holdings, what you'll find it is that we'll have bought 75% of the Vanguard US large cap. Okay, so just we're actually buying straight up another ETF that has tax advantages and so on. 25% remains in cash. We're going to use that 25% as collateral to then top up the rest of the US dollar that we need, US equity that we need, by buying the S&P E-mini futures contract. Right, so we only have to, in reality, put like 3-4% margin down to be able to get a full exposure to the S&P. So you have 75% in an ETF, 25% in an S&P E-mini contract. Now we have our full 100% exposure to the S&P 500, right? That's step one. That's how you get what you need. That's how you give the clients what they want. Now, how would you give them what they need, which is a diversification? Well, we still have $25 of margin that we could use to go long and short all of those different asset classes that we talked about. And we really don't need 25%. It's just a good buffer to have in case there's, you know, margin requirements go up and down over time when crisis goes, when we have moments of crisis and we need more margin. 25 is more than necessary for our needs. But most of the time, you're using 10% margin in order to get full exposure to a managed futures trading strategy. And then we trade that every day. We rebalance that managed futures strategy every day. We trade it on an ongoing basis. We keep the one-to-one exposure between the two strategies every day. So that's it, we're really not using the ETF as collateral. We're using the cash, the 25% cash as collateral. And the same thing goes with RSBT. In that case, we're topping it up with U.S. Treasury futures.
So you can fund allocations to managed futures from RSST, their U.S. stocks and managed futures ETF, and or you can fund the managed futures allocation from your bond allocation using RSBT, the bonds and managed futures ETFs, right? Yeah, well, that makes sense. I mean, can you, so walk us through how you can use these versatile ETFs to change the makeup of your portfolio. The most obvious one that comes to mind is to stack managed futures and trend on your pre-existing 60/40 portfolio. The other way is, you know, what if you already had managed futures trend, for example, in your portfolio, but you want to back out of the line item risk, or the advisor wants to back their client out of the line item risk. So if you're already in a diversifier like managed futures, but it's causing behavioral issues, how can you use RSST or RSBT to solve the problem, for example, of like, how can I change my client's emotional disposition so they keep the diversifiers?
Those are very good two questions. So let's talk about the first scenario, right? Most advisors that I know are now kind of transitioning into this period where they're trying to find a little bit of excess returns by picking better stocks or picking managers that pick better stocks to try to outperform the equity markets. And the same thing goes for fixed income, right? So you got the 60/40 portfolio, and we're trying really hard as in the advisor community to do stock picking for our alpha, right? Alpha is just, did you outperform the market at the same level of risk? And as we know from the SPIVA reports, you know, this is really hard to do. It's number one, it's, you know, if you look at the top decile or top quartile of managers, actually, over the last 15 years, you're looking at outperformance of one in a bit. And then that's assuming that those top quartile managers are going to continue to outperform by one in a bit over the next 15 years, right? Which we know that doesn't tend to happen. So getting excess returns by stock picking and bond picking, I think in the most competitive landscape, the most liquid market of the S&P 500s and PTSX 60 is really, really hard. All right. So there's still the desire to outperform at 60/40. But maybe there's another way to try to do that. And this is by the concept of return stacking, right? Where you can say, okay, look, I'm not going to try to pick stocks anymore. I'm going to give you 60/40. So we're going to get the market. And then I'm going to stack these diversifiers on top. Like managed futures trend following, we think it will add an extra 200 to 300 basis points a year. Like that's 2 to 3 times. And it's more consistent because it's designed to be an absolute return product. It'll be up 7 out of 10 years. Or it has historically, and we expect it. We have high expectations that it will continue to do so. And so, you know, most years you'll be able to stack a positive outcome to the 60/40, and use return stacking as a return enhancer, right? So we call it like return stacking for outperformance. And that's when you're doing 60/40, and let's say 20, right? Where you sell 20% of your equities, buy something like RSST, and then you get your equities back plus an extra 20% of trend. Or you could do 10% equity sell, 10% bond sell, buy RSBT, 10% buy RSST for 10%, you get your 20%, right? And then you get the benefit of this return stacking for outperformance, right? Again, doesn't happen every year. Last couple of years have been, we had, you know, trend following had double digit returns in 2022, and it's been kind of flat to down since, right? So it doesn't happen every year, but most years you're going to do it more consistently than we've seen in stock picking.
So yeah, so but if you had had the RSBT or RSST in your portfolio, and assuming it was available, of course, you could still have them to this day, right? I mean, you wouldn't have been disrupted. It wouldn't have been a case where they were taking away from the returns of your stocks and bonds. You wouldn't have had to tactically get out of or tactically get into these trades in any way. You would have gotten the incremental return from the stack, from your alternatives, the managed futures in this case that we're talking about. And that would have actually offset, in those bad years where stocks and bonds were down, that would have actually offset the losses that you experienced from both stocks and bonds in those years like 2022. And at a time when you most wanted it.
That's right. And the interesting...
Even though 23 and 24 were much, you know, were continuing to be good years for equities, you could still collect the risk premium from the managed futures, whatever that was, without having to sacrifice your S&P 500 at all.
That's right. And the line item risk of holding something that has been kind of reverting back to a little bit of its mean, maybe having a negative year, the S&P was up 20, trend following was down 4, that combo would have been up 16. It's not that bad, right? And so
what comes to mind is if you're using leverage in an aggressive way, in a way that is potentially to your detriment, let's say you've got a 60-40 portfolio, it's done, you know, X amount of return for the last number of years, it's been great, but now you want more, you want to beat the market. So you're going to use margin to buy more shares of Apple, Nvidia, Meta, or Alphabet. You know, that's not really, I mean, that's not a prudent use of leverage, of fully correlated leverage. Sure, if stocks continue to rise, it's wonderful. But if there's a sharp decline, you could be in for margin calls, larger losses, and having to sell assets to cover.
That's exactly it. So I want to talk about that. I mean, when you're trying to pick stocks, oftentimes you have to concentrate your holdings. And what you'll see is you're taking more of the same idiosyncratic risk, right? Your equities need to live in an environment where it's growth oriented. And if there's a bear market, doesn't matter how much your alpha has been, you're going to go down with the rest of the market, right? So when you're trying to pick securities, you often take more variance, more volatility, and more downside. The interesting thing about stacking managed futures trend is that, yes, you're using leverage and to get an extra 20% on top. So you're getting your 60, 40, 20. But that 20 has such a characteristic that when trends are prolonged and persistent, like in 08, like in 2000, 2003, like in 2022, they tend to offset losses. So in the worst bear markets, when you look at managed futures indices going back to 2000, in every bear market, they've had an ability to reduce your maximum drawdown while using leverage. And we call that defensive leverage, right? We always talk about leverage. Everybody has leverage aversion, but we need to define what good leverage is and bad leverage is. We say that you want to avoid lice, you know, leverage that is illiquid, concentrated, and excessive. And that's what you tend to have when you pick stocks and you concentrate, or when you do the 2X ETFs. When you're using leverage that is non-correlated, it is diversified, it's not excessive, and it acts as an offset during the worst of times. So I think that's the concept for us on return stacking for returns, for excess returns, for outperformance.
And that's the point, right? That's the point, is to increase the breadth of asset allocation in a portfolio, in your portfolio. Not the depth.
Yeah. All that does is it may increase your return, but it more than increases your variance and reduces your compound rate of return. Like if you double exposure to the same risk, like if you do the 2X S&P 500, you don't get double the return over time. And that is a simple mathematical reality. And it's due to the compounding effect of higher volatility. The higher the variance, the lower the compound rate of return. Right. So the question is, how can I increase my return while not increasing my volatility? And because of the non-correlation of managed futures trend, you can, let's say, you know, you can have 100% S&P and then another 100% of managed futures. Managed futures runs at 13% volatility independently. S&P runs at 20% volatility independently. But when you combine the 100 plus 100, the volatility of the combination only goes up from 20 to 21-22%. Right? Versus doubling your exposure to the S&P, you're getting 40% volatility, and you're not actually, because of the variance drag, you're getting a lower compound return. So by keeping the variance relatively the same with that stack of managed futures, you get the benefit from compounding effect of that diversifier on top, right? So what you want to do is if you want to use leverage to increase your returns, not increase your variance. And that's what this type of stacks do really well.
Did we cover scenario number two yet?
No, let me talk about the other scenario, which is there are, you know, hard diversified advisors that have been, you know, pleaded the case to their investors to make room in the portfolio to hold these managed futures funds. And they're toeing the line, but they're feeling it at this point, right? That line item risk that nobody can understand, it becomes really, really difficult for them. So let's say we have an advisor that has a 10% allocation to managed futures and it's been rough to hold, but they don't want to stack. They don't want to have to explain to clients that they're using leverage, that they're stacking an extra 20% on top. Well, what they could do instead is they could decide to sell their existing managed futures funds that are really difficult to hold. You know, now you have $10 cash, right? You can then sell an extra 10% of your equities, right? So you have $20 cash. You buy RSST for 10%. And when you buy that RSST for 10%, you are getting that combined line item risk, the combined line items. You're getting back your 10% of equities, and then you're getting back your managed futures. And so the client will see $10 cash, $10 in RSST, and then the rest of their portfolio. They'll see it as, oh, we're being very conservative here. We got rid of that terrible line item. We got this thing that is giving me similar returns to the S&P plus some more, which is interesting. And I have $10 cash that I guess my advisor can use for, you know, when there's blood on the streets, you can, you know, buy stocks when if there's a big drawdown for you to double down, or you can just simply keep it in high yielding cash, right? But when you X-ray that portfolio, yeah, it's dry powder, right? But when you X-ray that portfolio, what the client's actually getting was the original portfolio they had. They just, it's an easy to hold package, right? You X-ray it, you get your, you know, 90% of what you had before in the 10% managed futures, but they see cash, RSST, and the rest. And so you don't need to use leverage in your clients' portfolios to use return stacking. There is a way to even to make it very conservative, just as conservative, but the one key benefit is that masking the line item risk that always is difficult to hold behaviorally.
That's a really versatile solution. It allows you to solve the problem forward for advisors looking to diversify, but it also allows you to solve the problem in reverse for advisors who are already diversified but want to, you know, lower the optics of that line item risk.
Yeah. So that's there's return stacking for outperformance and return stacking for diversification. And those are the you know, really neat ways to look at it. And it's catching fire. So I love to see it.
Rod, that's fascinating. I think the potential for these new tools that you've brought to market are extraordinary.
Thank you for helping us spread the word, Pierre. I genuinely think that this is, I've been working my whole career to be able to provide something like this. And it wasn't until the regulatory changes that came down the pike in the last few years and allowed us to push this through, you know, some pioneering asset managers that were also doing similar things. And I think the world of investing and advice is going to change now that we can do what I just described. Right, and we're focusing here on managed futures trend, but there's a lot of things one can stack, and there's a lot more to explore here. So I encourage everybody to go to returnstack.com and learn a bit more about what are the possibilities here. But managed futures trends with the original launch, and the one that I think makes most sense for the public today.
Thank you, Rod.
Thank you, Pierre. I really appreciate it.